Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. With the local elections over, the parties are now in full campaigning mode for the general election in June. Theresa May made her pledges on tax last week, and this week it was Labour's turn. Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell told Andrew Marr that a Labour government would not raise taxes on any individual earning less than £80,000 a year.
And your message today is that if you earn £80,000 or more a year, you'll be paying more in tax, but if you don't, you'll be paying no more.
But what we're saying today, anyone earning below £80,000 will be guaranteeing you will not have an increase in income tax or VAT or national insurance contributions. And for those above £80,000, we're asking them to pay a modest bit more. Why? To fund our public services. You had Theresa May on last week, Andrew. If I just make this point, you put that very good question to her about nurses. 11% cut in wages over the last 7 years, some of them having to go to food banks, our nurses. That cannot be right. So we're going to ask those higher earners just to pay a bit more.
Are we talking about a new rate of tax, because the 45p rate and then the 50p rate, possibly under Labour?
What will happen over this next week is that Labour Party, the Democratic Party, will be consolidating and confirming our manifesto. We'll launch it the week after next, and then we'll identify the very specifics of this. But I wanted people to...
But you've said very clearly that people over £80,000 a year will be paying more.
A bit more, a modest bit more. Well, let me say this. The reason I'm saying this, because I want middle and lower earners to be assured that under Labour they will not be paying more taxes, because I've seen some of these ludicrous figures that the Tories have been bandying about, and I wanted them to have that assurance.
And you say a little bit more, so that John McDonnell, who used to want people to pay over £100,000, to be paying 60%, has changed his mind.
I don't want to preempt any decisions that will be made within the democratic process of the Labour Party. You'll see it will be a modest increase.
A modest increase.
But it will go, I'll tell you where it will go, to our education services, our caring services and our NHS.
Marr also challenged McDonnell on whether he would in fact be the first Marxist Chancellor of the United Kingdom.
You are applying to be the second most important person in the country, and you are going to be the first Marxist Chancellor this country has ever had in modern times. How is that going to affect the way we go?
I'm going to be the first socialist in the tradition of the Labour Party. And what that means, it's going to be rooted, let me just finish, it's going to be rooted in Labour Party values. And what are they? Fairness and equality, but making sure that there is a democratic decision taken at every stage.
Shortly afterwards on the Sunday Politics, Andrew Neil dug up the recording of Mr McDonnell being rather more frank about where he stood on the issue.
We've got to demand systemic change. I'm honest with people. I'm a Marxist. You know, this is a classic crisis of the economy, classic capitalist crisis. I've been waiting for this for a generation.
That was McDonnell speaking at a Communities Against Cuts event in 2013. Meanwhile, the Tories unveiled their new plans to overhaul mental health provision in the NHS. Jeremy Hunt pledged to recruit 10,000 extra staff to treat people with mental health issues specifically. But he did admit that mental health services were still not good enough. Here he is speaking to Robert Peston.
We are undergoing probably the biggest expansion of mental health anywhere in Europe at the moment.
But I talk to mental health doctors and they say the money is not getting through to them.
Well, if you look at the actual facts in terms of the money, an independent NHS report a couple of months ago said that there's 1.4 billion more being spent on mental health compared to 3 years ago, about 120,000 more people.
It's been allocated, but is it getting through? I talk to mental health doctors and they say their resources are not increasing.
This is actually what's being spent, and we're actually treating around 120,000 more people a year. But what this is really about today is if you are a parent who has a child with some really serious psychological illnesses, what you want is for that child to be treated by the NHS. But too often what happens is that the first line of help you get is from the police service, and you can end up being in a police cell, and that can make the condition worse.
It's obviously
bad for the police. And so what we need to do is to improve what we call in the NHS our crisis care response to make sure.
So how quickly will you be able to provide alternative facilities so that the police do not lock up vulnerable people?
Well, we are making good progress.
But how long?
Well, we said that between now and 2020, in order to deliver this commitment, that we will recruit an extra 10,000 professionals into mental health services, because it's not just about money, it's actually having the people mm-hmm. who can deliver the services you need. But this will mean that we have to do crisis care better. And this is part of what's called parity of esteem. So we changed the law in 2012 and we said that mental and physical health should be treated equally, what's called parity of esteem. But at the moment, if you have a mental health crisis, you don't get as good care.
You might expect Nigel Farage to be disappointed about UKIP's poor performance at the local elections on Thursday. But in fact, he was upbeat about the party's prospects this June. For now, anyway.
After the local elections, you said that the wipeout of UKIP didn't matter because you'd transformed the country because you'd secured that Brexit vote. Not exactly loyal, though, to Paul Nuttall, your successor, was that?
No, I mean, Paul himself said we were victims of our own success. I mean, you know, I led the party 4 years ago in those county council elections in England on a manifesto. We're bringing back grammar schools, getting Britain outside the European Union, controlling immigration and helping small businesses. And 4 years on, the British Prime Minister was running on exactly the same ticket and swept the board. So and
you got 4 million votes in 2015. What are you going to get this time?
That depends. I mean, when she launched this campaign and she said, look, trust me, I will deliver Brexit, but if I don't win, we will have this coalition of chaos that will effectively stop Brexit from happening. The number of UKIP supporters that contacted me and said, you know what, Nigel, this time we have to support Theresa May. Now, fast forward a couple of weeks, when people realise, actually, this election's a non-contest, that she's going to win by a country mile anyway, then I think the squeeze that you tend to see on small parties towards the end of a campaign, in this case, will be the other way around.
Can UKIP survive, though, if it gets wiped out in the general election?
Oh, UKIP's going to survive. It has to survive.
Wow. I mean,
well, it's rather like, you know, we all pay the house insurance every year, not because we want there to be a fire, but just in case there is one. And I think it's all well and good for Mrs. May, who gives wonderful speeches and sounds very reassuring. But the truth of it is, as Home Secretary, she did the same thing on immigration and other issues and didn't deliver. And UKIP needs to be there in case there is backsliding on Brexit.
I mean, your chum Aaron Banks seems to think it's over for UKIP and is setting up this patriotic alliance. What's all that about?
I don't really know. I mean, Aaron,
You're not going to get involved in the patriotic alliance.
No. I mean, I'm happy for there to be political movements that campaign for things. UKIP.
It's not an alternative to UKIP as far as you can see.
No, and it wouldn't be. I mean, if in 2.5 years' time Mrs. May has delivered the kind of Brexit that voters wanted, then I think you can ask the question, what is UKIP's future? Where does it go from here?
Neil Hamilton, UKIP's leader in Wales, was a little less optimistic than Nigel Farage, but he suggested instead that the party's misfortunes were due to cosmic forces beyond anyone's control and that the party would have to become more professional as a result. He spoke earlier to Andrew Neil.
I'm struggling to see the way back for your party because you're no longer a threat to the Tories in the South. Indeed, UKIP voters are flocking to the Tories in the South. You're no longer a threat to Labour in the North. It's the Tories who now look more of a threat to Labour in the North. So I see there is no route to progress, is there?
Well, the reality will be that once we're back on the domestic agenda again and the Brexit negotiations are concluded, we'll know what the outcome is and the focus will be upon bread and butter issues. And we have all sorts of policies in our programme which the other parties can't match us on. I mean, the talk today is all about putting up taxes to put more money into the health service. You know, we would scrap half the foreign aid budget and put another $8 billion into the health service. No other party is saying that. I think these are policies which will be popular with ordinary working people.
Is Paul Nuttall to blame for what's happened, or would the meltdown have happened no matter who was leader?
Oh, I think we are seeing what you might call cosmic forces beyond the control of any individual at the moment. It's certainly not Paul Nuttall's fault. He's only been in the job 6 months, and half of that time, of course, he was fighting a by-election. And UKIP has to beef up its organisation, and we have to become more professional than we have been recently. Yeah. It's been not a brilliant year for UKIP one way or another, as you know. Yeah. But I think that our prospects in the future are certainly very rosy, because I don't believe the Tories will deliver on many of the promises they're now making.
And finally, it wouldn't be an election campaign without Emily Thornberry making a faux pas of some sort. This time she has been accused of sneering at voters by trying to impress upon them that this election is about more than just Theresa May's hair.
What we're putting out is that we are the alternative government
there is a choice, and that it will either be a Conservative government or a Labour government, and people need to focus on that, and not a single vote has been cast yet. And we will win this if we win it. We will win it on the basis of our policies and the fact that we have been able to get over our message on the doorstep, showing people that it does not need to be this way. There is no alternative vision that the Tories are offering, and it is not good enough for people to simply say, I like Theresa May's hair, or I like that shade of blue. You know, politics is not about that. Politics is about how you change people's lives and being able to put forward a platform that makes sense and is a clear alternative. That's all for this week. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can receive a special election offer of 6 issues of The Spectator for £6 at spectator.co.uk/election offer.